Guys, my biggest fear is actually bananas.
You're
Like,
lying.
genuinely. No, I swear, genuinely.
They have like a one-night stand and then they die.
Okay, guys, so I'm gonna talk to you about how 2024 is gonna be a really special year. Yeah, that's Yaz's worst nightmare.
On their wedding day, they get absolutely swarmed by bugs.
They get to like teenagers and they're like, damn me.
Let's party.
Wait, have I eaten a cicada before? Guys, I think I've eaten a cicada.
I absolutely flopped it. I failed.
Honestly, guys, I was like, nah, how the hell am I gonna do this?
It's just so weird that I kind of fell into it.
Wasn't that lame, babes? Deep-rooted banana trauma.
You're listening to the So Cultured podcast, where we bring you the latest science and tech goss, served with a side of piping hot laboratory.
We're your hosts, Liv,
Yaz,
and Taz,
three girls with a passion for science and tech.
Look, we've got the credentials, so we should know what we're talking about.
We're asking the dumb questions so you don't have to, and obviously all opinions are our own.
We hope you guys enjoyed today's episode, and let's get into it. What's up, guys? Today is a bittersweet episode because it is the last episode of season one, which is low-key sad. But maybe we need a slight break on bringing you all of this science information. Before we get into today's episode, we wanted to give you a quick rundown of when you can expect season two and what you can expect from season two. So, Taz, can you let the listeners know when we will be back for season two?
So season two will drop on the 1st of May. So you've got just over a month to wait until our very next episode, but we hope it will be worth it.
Yeah, I feel like this season has been so incredible. I've learned so much already, and I hope Same. You guys as the listeners have. Taz and Liv, what has been your favorite episode, or what's the thing that you've learned from being on this podcast and like having these discussions?
I think my favorite episode was, I might be biased because it was one where I spoke about the science, but it was episode 4 because we just laughed the whole episode, like talking about my archaeology boots and then like poo fetish.
That was so funny.
Like, sorry, that was one jam-packed episode.
That really was. Oh my gosh. My favorite actually was the dark matter episode, the space episode, because it just made me feel like so nostalgic. Because when I was younger, my favorite topic in science was space. And I always just felt, I don't know, like I can't explain it, but it just gives me like a really nice feeling. So I actually loved that episode. But all the gossip sections, to be fair, have actually had me creasing. Like they have been so funny. Yeah. But I think the boat party one for me was the best. That was just so funny.
Yeah, I think some of these stories have been absolutely wild. Like to think this is
I don't think we
on.
Was expecting. Yeah, like we was not expecting like these kind of crazy stories. We was hoping for them, but we was like, maybe we won't get them, but you guys have absolutely pulled through. So as we always mention, you guys know where to find us on Instagram and all that, so please send in your stories for season two if you love the gossip section and want us to continue it. We need your stories, so please send them in and we would really appreciate it.
And also, guys, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please do leave us a review on whatever please. Platform you use to stream us, because we really would appreciate that.
We would.
Yeah, just to highlight that we are all still in STEM or like still working full time. So this has been in our free time. And honestly, we've loved every minute of it. But any kind of rating does definitely help us continue. Yeah, hopefully everyone is enjoying and they will rate, because I do have a big fear that like no one is going to listen to this.
Yeah, same.
We've got to back ourselves.
But yeah, what are your guys' like biggest fear? Because I just feel like I've really enjoyed getting to know you more. I feel like we talk so much, but through this podcast, I'm learning so much about
you. Yeah, so true.
What is your biggest fears?
Guys, my biggest fear is actually bananas.
You're
like
lying.
Genuinely. No, I swear, genuinely.
Bananas. What? Like
bananas because the smell of them, the sight of them, God forbid the taste of them, it actually makes me like want to shrivel up into a ball and combust.
What about like foam banana sweets? Do you like them?
No, nothing banana. I don't like anything banana flavoured.
Banana milkshake. Nothing.
If I smell it, I will actually throw up. And I think that's why I'm so petrified of them, because I know that if petrified I smell it or taste bananas. It, I'm going to throw up.
So if you came around my house and I had bananas in like a fruit bowl on the side,
I'd leave. I'd stand outside while you eat. Oh, if you had them in the fruit bowl, no, that's fine, because it's the smell or the taste. Like if I know I'm going to smell it, I know I'm going to throw up. So I can look at them, but like if you're eating one in front of me, I have to leave the room. Nice. And it's no joke, guys. It's actual real fear. Like I genuinely, my heart starts beating, my hands get sweaty. Like it's actually bad.
I actually don't mean to laugh at your fear, your genuine fear, but it is okay. Funny.
You can laugh.
That is like an odd one, but I mean, maybe you in another life, like you were traumatized because of
it's so ingrained in me. Like it's really bad,
deep rooted banana trauma.
Literally. But yeah, what about you guys?
What's my biggest fear? Leading on to that is a little bit deep. I'm such a hypochondriac. My biggest fear is just like, I don't know, being ill, to be honest. Like I just can't deal with that.
You thought. Just deeply in trauma. You just
that's a valid one.
I could say go to therapy, guys. It definitely helps.
What's yours, Yaz?
Mine is bugs. Like I know I'm a marine biologist and I work on microorganisms, but like a lot of invertebrates just like fly in, bugs, ants, even ladybirds, they freak me out. Like everything actually does, and I hate anything that's like creepy crawly. I just can't deal with it because it actually
that's
gives
valid
me
as well.
Like anxiety. If something lands on me, I literally start to have a panic attack. I'm just like, get this
oh
off
my
me.
God, that is relatable, to be fair. I do understand that.
No, I'm actually laughing inside because that brings me on to my science section. You're just going to love this, Yaz, honestly.
Oh, no.
No, am I going to cringe? God. Is my skin going to crawl because...
Yeah, you might have to sit this one out.
Okay, see you later.
Okay, guys, so I'm going to talk to you about how 2024 is going to be a really special year.
Exciting.
Ooh. Right, so now that I've got your attention, I'm actually going to be talking about cicadas. Any ideas what they are?
Cicadas. No, I've never heard of them.
No, but it sounds like you said it's going to be bug related, so I don't
I'm guessing they're bugs.
Yeah, they are 100% bugs, and they're actually in the same family as stink bugs and bed bugs, and they're usually the bugs that are responsible for that really, really loud sound that you hear at night. Not crickets, but if you've been to North America, you usually hear it at dusk, and it's typically like a loud, distinct, buzzy, droning sound. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. Yeah.
So there's actually 7 different types of cicadas in North America, and they've actually got a really long lifespan. So I think 3 species of them have a lifespan of 17 years, and the other 4 have a lifespan of 13 years. So they grow old. Yeah.
Is that a lot for a bug, is it? Okay.
I think that's quite a long time. I actually don't know what the average lifespan of a bug is, to be honest. But
no, me neither.
You would have thought it's quick because when people do studies on like genetics, if they use Drosophila flies, it's because
they have
quick generation times, right?
Yeah.
True.
Well, they actually spend most of their time underground, but when the soil temperature starts increasing above 64 degrees Fahrenheit, soz for Fahrenheit, I never use that, but we're talking about North America here. That's when they emerge, and they then live for a few weeks. And the whole reason basically to come out of the soil is to find a mate and for the females to lay their eggs.
Wait, what? So they're just like most of their life, they're just underground, and then they randomly, they just come out.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
So for some species, they're underground for 13 years. Some species, they're underground for 17 years, and then they just come out.
Is it like, what, like dead on 13 years, or that's like an average?
No, I think it is dead on 13 years.
They get to like teenagers and they're like, damn, we...
Let's party.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's a really interesting feature of cicadas. And another really interesting feature is that they're all synchronized. So they all emerge at the same time, which to me is that, like...
Yaz's worst nightmare.
Yeah, that's Yaz's worst nightmare.
Imagine just a swarm of these things just like, oh.
Wait. So they're all underground and like... Every, what, 13 years, like a bunch of these bugs just come out the ground.
Yeah, all of the same species just come out of the ground at the same time.
This sounds like an actual horror movie. Are you being serious?
Yeah, well, it gets even better, guys. We're not even into the depths of it yet.
Oh, God. Okay, go.
Obviously, that sounds like our worst nightmares, especially Yaz's, but there's actually a special reason behind why they do this. And it's simply because if they all emerge at the same time, there's just simply no way that predators can eat them all. So it kind of ensures that a lot of them will live long enough to breed and lay eggs for the next generation of cicadas.
That's kind of smart. Evolutionary, it's like we're just going to absolutely like overwhelm the predators. Mm. And so... we're just going to survive. But then you said that 2024 is going to be a special year. So like, what does that mean?
Okay, so I mentioned earlier that some species of cicadas are on a 13-year cycle and some species of cicadas are on a 17-year cycle. And what's special about these numbers is that they're prime numbers.
Oh, okay. So for the listeners, for anyone who doesn't know, a prime number is a number that can only be divided by itself and one without remainders. Is that right? So I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, this is not only a really good way of evading predators, because it's really hard for one predator to sync up with a lifespan of 13 and 17 years, but it also makes it pretty hard for some species of cicadas to synchronize with other species. So in any given year, some species of cicadas will emerge whilst others won't. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so is that good for them? Because they, like, why would they not want to? Is it because they need to find a mate within their own species? So it would just be, like, too much going on. So it's better to avoid each other's, like, out of ground.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, Yaz. So some of the species just take longer to mature, but evolutionary, it's kind of worked out in their favour as well, that they are coming out at different times, you know?
Yeah. Or maybe because they need food, depending on what they're consuming as well. Like if there's too many, that might overwhelm what they need as well. I don't know.
Yeah. Obviously, in any given year, some species will emerge and some species won't. Apart from every 221 years, which is 13 times 17, going back to our prime number situation, when they'll all emerge simultaneously.
Okay.
Oh my God.
So you're saying that 2024 is that year?
Well, maybe. So
oh my God.
The last time that the seven species of cicadas all emerged at the same time was 1803. So to put that into perspective, that was when King George III was on the throne. And that is King Charles III's great, 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 great grandfather. And also when Napoleon was thinking about invading England. That's how long ago all these cicadas emerged at the same time. So it's a real historical event. What?
Damn. When you said King George III, I was like, there's no way I know when that was. So I'm glad that you put all the greats and greats in. But my history, I think as we've established, none of us know history very well.
No,
I recently watched Napoleon, so I kind of get it that it was a while ago.
No, I literally, I was like, I just Googled like 1803, what monarch was around at that time, and it said King George III. And I thought that was either Queen Elizabeth's dad or Queen Victoria's dad. And I was way off. It was like way before then.
Don't, because I haven't even watched The Crown. I don't even know anything about
that. Oh, you need to watch The Crown. It's so good.
But okay, so this was a long time ago, 1803. So... what does that mean? Should we be worried?
2024 is the new year. It's the next Oh my god. Wait, where does this happen again? North America.
Yeah, so we're safe, guys. So, don't worry.
Oh. Yeah, but some of our listeners might be in North America.
Okay, yeah, right. Okay, not to worry, guys. There's just going to be a ton of cicadas. They'll all emerge. They'll fly around, have a party, find a lady, shed their exoskeletons, make a massive mess, and then die. So we should all be...
Give me okay. So they die literally like after finding a mate. So it's kind of dumb that they live all their life underground being bored as hell. I'm assuming they're bored. And then they just come up for like one night. They have like a one night stand and then they die.
Well, yeah, they live for a few weeks above ground. So yeah, it's not that long.
A few weeks. Okay. So if we ever did come back in this world as another animal, I would not want to be a cicada.
Like,
that's just me.
Neither.
Okay, but for our listeners in North America, on a serious note, they are harmless to humans, but obviously they can be a bit of a pest. And like, as you can imagine, they're loud. There's gonna be a ton of them around. It is a historical event, which is really cool, but they can be a bit of a pest to trees if females lay their eggs in them. So experts are actually advising the protection of trees by covering them in a mesh or netting, or like covering the branches in cheesecloth.
Okay.
Yeah, they only consume sap, so they are really harmless. And one extra thing to remember is pesticides do not work on cicadas. Not that I condone the use of them anyways, but it's worth noting that, yeah, it's pointless. Don't use them, guys.
Wait, but what, you're just supposed to, because nobody knows like the date that it's going to happen, right? Or do they? They just know it's going to happen this year. So you're supposed to keep a tree covered like the whole year.
So they emerge when soils start increasing in temperature around springtime. And yeah, it will be like 64 degrees. Once the temperature starts reaching 64 degrees, that's kind of their moment to emerge. So it could be any second now.
I did Google, that's like 17 degrees Celsius, so that's more of like for us UK listeners to put into perspective. But also, if people cover the trees and they want to consume the sap, does that then affect them? Like, will there be knock-on effects for their, you know, their lives, because they need something? Like, is that going to then be really detrimental, so they might not even get to maturity to have like find a mate and produce?
It's a valid point. I'm not too sure. I think you've got to weigh up. Do you want to protect the trees from what they're calling pests, or do you want to protect these species of cicadas? I think in general, like, they're not under threat, you know? So I think it would be fine to protect certain species of trees from these bugs. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what this reminds me of? So I know we always talk about how I don't watch TV and like I don't get any TV references or movie references. But do you know one thing I do absolutely love watching is 90 Day Fiancé. Have you guys ever watched it?
No.
No.
Oh, where are you going with this?
It's literally my favourite show ever. So this one series of like this couple called Brandon and Mary. And I'm like praying that one of the listeners know Brandon and Mary because they're hilarious. But they literally, right? So he goes over to the Philippines. He's been staying there for like, literally, I think like a year or two. Then they finally have their wedding day. And on their wedding day, they get absolutely swarmed by bugs, like everywhere. They were in her dress. Honestly, like up her dress was full of bugs. The bugs were everywhere. Please Google it. We will put this on episode 8 figures. A picture of Brandon and Mary on their wedding day. It is insane. And I'm just imagining that all these cicadas are coming out the ground and like this is going to happen to someone. Yaz, right now, if a load of cicadas just came in your house, like what are you going to do?
Cry. I don't know. I'd put my gas hob on. Would that deter them?
Yeah. Oh my God. I actually just Googled like cicadas and you can see the swarms and it is, oh my god, guys, people eat them. Wait, have I eaten a cicada before? Guys, I think I've eaten a cicada.
Oh my gosh, what?
Their eyes are kind of cool,
guys, but... I think I've eaten one.
Where in Asia?
Okay, Taz, you've been to Thailand, haven't you?
Yeah.
So like on all the night markets, they've actually got like stalls with bugs and you can like buy bugs and eat bugs. And me and my sister, one night, we got loads of bugs and we were eating them. And I swear on my life, I think I've eaten a cicada.
I've got to say, though, I literally just Googled it as well. And I just saw one article and it was like, the cicadas... Wait, what does it say? It says, the cicadas are coming. Let's eat them. No thanks.
Oh.
We can solve world hunger. We can just distribute these, I guess.
Apparently they taste like nuts.
I don't remember.
If you remove the legs and the wings. Stop. Okay, oh, I'm done. That is disgusting. So we can expect that to happen this year in North America.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay in the UK.
Okay, yeah. So to summarize, we have been talking about cicadas and how 2024 is going to be the year that they all emerge in North America, which should be super interesting. And the last time this happened was 1803. And that's because they have a life cycle of either 13 or 17 years. And these are prime numbers. So maths is the answer, guys. And maths is why these cicadas only emerge at the same time every 221 years. So I hope you enjoyed.
Yeah, thanks so much for that, Taz. That was so interesting. I feel like that was such a fun science topic to end season one on. So thank you so much for looking over that and talking about that topic. And for today's laboratory section, we are doing something a little bit different considering it's our last episode. So let's get into it.
Okay, so it's obviously our last episode, and I thought we'd end series one on a positive and motivational note. So the laboratory might not be too hot on this one, but it's worth listening, guys. So obviously in every episode introduction, we claim to have the credentials to be speaking about at least some of the subjects that we've covered in series one on this podcast. So we thought we'd give some backing as to why that is and maybe tell you a bit about our journeys that got us to where we are today. So if any of you would like to get into the science space in one way or another, and you're kind of listening to us like, I'd want to do a PhD or I'd want to get into science, then listen up and take notes. Okay, so Yaz, would you like to start? So how did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, I feel like my story is a little bit unconventional to what normal, like the science route would be. So I am Yasmin Mida. I don't feel like I've done a proper official introduction. I am doing a PhD in marine microbiology at the University of Exeter, and I am not a typical marine biologist at all. I do a lot of molecular biology, and I kind of got into this in like a very weird, convoluted way. So kind of like background at school, I was technically always on this like gifted and talented register. I don't know if they still do things like that, but people must have thought I had some kind of special talent, but I was always like the most chatty, disruptive person in my class. And I was never really like that convinced that I wanted to work hard or go down an academic route. I did my GCSEs and did like triple science, and in the UK, I don't know if they even still do that. I feel like I'm getting old because the education system's already different. I did good in my science and maths, like never got A stars. I think I just got A's in my science and math, and then B's and C's and stuff. And then it just made logical sense to study science for A levels. So I picked the three sciences, biology, chemistry, physics, and math for my A levels. I absolutely flopped it. I failed. I got a U in physics. I got a D in biology. A D in chemistry. I think I got maybe a C in math. I thought like I did well in some of them. But anyway, I completely failed and I resat the whole year. So I went to a sixth form college and did my A levels again. I decided that physics was not my thing and did geography instead. But again, during this stage, like I was then a year older. I could drive. I had freedom. I was at a college. I didn't really study as much as I should have. I was someone that was always out. And again, like I didn't actually do that well. So I had applied to Warwick University for my top choice to study biology. And my second choice was Brighton. I didn't get the grades to go to my top choice uni. So I went to my insurance choice. And again, like, I never even knew I wanted to go to uni. I was just like, oh, like, biology was one of the subjects that I found slightly easier than others. Not that I did well. I think I got a C. No, I got one B, two Cs and a D in my A level. So like, never claimed to be smart. I think they needed like A's and B's and I just didn't get that. So for me, like, I've always struggled with this imposter syndrome because I was just like, well, I never got A stars. I've never actually been the smartest one around. Mm-hmm. But I've always been driven by curiosity, asking questions and just general interests in the subjects.
Yeah.
So did my undergrad in biology, kind of told myself, like, changed my life around, really wanted to work hard and actually prove that maybe it wasn't that I wasn't smart enough and I just didn't understand the education system. And so then I pushed myself. I managed to then get a first class degree for my undergrad. And I was like, oh, like, maybe I can sit exams. Like, maybe I can do it. And that gave me a little bit of like a push. But then again, I was in an actual like biology degree doing really varied subjects, whether it was ecology, it was biomed, it was immunology, could have been forensic biology. Like, it was very, very varied. And I really struggled in finding something I wanted to go into. So it came around to a lot of like the end of third year, everyone was applying to do a master's. And I was like, nah, I don't even know what I want to do. But I'd always worked since I've been like 14. I've always worked alongside my studies, GCSE, yeah, A-levels, uni, like, never not worked. And I was like, I still have bills to pay. So finishing uni, it was never like, oh, I just have free time, I can explore what I want and just like sit and wait for the next thing. I knew I had to get a job and I just went to a local recruitment agency, like, give me a job. I got a job as a data analyst and was like, sure. And that was mainly because biology, like, in science, people couldn't take me on because I didn't have experience. And I didn't have any lab experience because you have to do that stuff voluntary, like, unpaid.
Yeah.
And I'm so against all of that. So I literally would just be like, nah, this is not for me. This is not the route. I'm clearly not cut out for it. So I worked as a data analyst, genuinely hated the role, and just kind of sat there one day like, do you know what? I'm going to do a master's in something I've always wanted to do. That was marine biology. I applied for one master's. And I'm aware that that's very lucky. Like, I was accepted onto the one master's I applied for. But I've always had an attitude like, if I don't get it, it's fine. I'll find something else. And the same kind of applied with the PhD. I only applied to one PhD and I was like, if I get it, great. If I don't, I'll just do something else. Like, I've never had a path where I know other people in science are like, I want to do a PhD. I want to do this. Like, I didn't even know what a PhD was. Like, I've never, I think, like, it's just so weird that I kind of fell into it. Yeah. And sometimes I think that's shocking to people because they're like, how'd you end up just like falling into a PhD? But that is genuinely my story. And obviously I'm coming to the end of my PhD now. And I would like to stay in academia, but I'm aware that there are a lot of things that could be problematic pursuing a career in academia. And so I'm at a bit of a crossroads. So I think it's also important that while people might hear that I've had this journey and I'm doing a PhD now, and that's what people perhaps aspire to do. And I'd say doing a PhD has been absolutely incredible. Like, I do thoroughly enjoy it, but I'm also not sure on the next steps, like whether I will become a lecturer or a professor. It's kind of an open question for me at the moment, but I'm very much someone who takes things like opportunities. I say yes, I might say no. You know, I think what is good for me at the current time and for what my situation is. And I think sometimes that's good, but maybe people might see that as being bad or not prepared. So I don't know. It's like a very mixed thought. Like, what what was your experience? Did one of you have like a set path to go into a PhD?
Yeah, no, I actually never planned on doing a PhD. And I, like you said, Yaz, I just kind of fell into it. And I always say to people, oh, it was just sheer luck. It was sheer luck. And then now that I'm looking back on it, it wasn't sheer luck. It was hard work. Do you know what I mean? No. Like, I pass judgment on how hard I worked, especially during uni and things. Yeah. And like for applications and stuff, obviously there is a luck element to it. But I've always put it down mm-hmm. to luck, but actually
mm-hmm. yeah, you did the yeah. work, you were the one that was yeah. doing it. It wasn't just the right time, right place, right time, whatever yeah. it is. Like, you genuinely
yeah, nobody just rocks up and is yeah, like
doors open because I work towards it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then they were presented mm-hmm. to you because it was the right time for you to have that exactly. opportunity. Like, yeah, you wouldn't yeah. have done that if you wouldn't have had a PhD or PhD mm-hmm. presented to you if you didn't do like a degree. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. I always find it so interesting finding out how other people started their journey in science and how every journey is literally so different. Mm-hmm. So that obviously brings me on to you, Liv. Do you want to share about how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, so I'm kind of similar to Yaz in the sense that, like, during school, so during, like, secondary school, I was a bit of, like, the naughty kid.
I can imagine that.
I was always messing about in class. I was always just doing things that I shouldn't have been doing. I was doing everything but focusing on my schoolwork, to be fair. But then when my exams rolled around, I was like, okay, I need to get my head mm-hmm. down and I actually do want to do well. I had like a little epiphany. I was like, no, I actually want to do well in my exams. So yeah, but I did, similar to you, Yaz, I did biology, chemistry, English and psychology at A-level. Mm-hmm. And my epiphany kind of continued. So I did work really hard in my A-levels and I did quite well in my A-levels. In terms of like university, I was pretty set on like wanting to go to Essex University because I never wanted to move away from home.
Okay, yeah.
Because I was working a full-time job, like very much similar to what you said, I couldn't afford to not be working. Mm-hmm. So I was working a full-time job the whole way throughout my undergraduate degree. I was literally working like 180 hours a week. I was working crazy hours.
What was your
hours.
Job?
I worked at Colchester Zoo.
Oh, love that.
And I No, it's, do you know what? It always sounds more exciting than what it was. But I started working there when I was like just turned 16 and I worked there until I was 21.
Nice.
But I just worked in like the shops in the zoo, but I started off like normal staff member. Then I got promoted to team leader and then supervisor, which is why I was working so much
because
I was
crazy.
Like supervising. So yeah, I was doing my full-time job like during my degree. So it was all pretty mad, not going to lie. But I did fairly well in my degree. So obviously now I'm a bioinformatician, so I also feel like I missed the intro, but yeah, I'm a bioinformatician. I'm currently a postdoc working on epigenetics, but during my degree I did biomedical science. So again, it was like very lab heavy. I didn't do like any bioinformatics modules. I think that most people assume that I have a CS background, like computer science background, mm-hmm. Or I did like a bioinformatics specific degree, but I didn't. I just did biomedical science and I'd never done any bioinformatics modules. But during my final year, I don't know if you guys are the same, we had like a final year dissertation. So it's like a final year project that you have to do. So for my uni, you had to apply to be in like specific professors' labs that you wanted to work with, or, you know, like if you liked the sound of their research and you wanted to work with them. Because I was working a full-time job, I was late with every single one of my deadlines and I was just late with everything in general. Like, I never knew what the hell was going on because my mind was preoccupied. So I put in my application late. So I ended up basically just not getting any of my choices. You had to put in like 5 and I didn't get any of them. So I got assigned to a professor who had a background in computer science and he was a bioinformatician. Mm. And the whole project was bioinformatics. And at first, honestly, guys, I was like, nah, how the hell am I going to do this? Like, I don't know any programming. I've never even thought about programming, let alone tried it. So how am I going to do this project? But I was really annoyed at the time because I was like, how are you assigning me to this bioinformatics project knowing I've never done a bioinformatics module? Like, you're literally setting me up for failure. Yeah. And this was like a huge part of our final year degree, like overall mark. So I was like, oh my God. So at first I was absolutely fuming. I was like, I need to change my project. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to be able to do this. But then I went to like the first meeting with the professor and he was super nice. And then I just had like, again, a mindset shift. And I was like, do you know what? Like, just take this as an opportunity to learn a new skill, embrace it, and just give it your best shot. And anyway, obviously I ended up absolutely loving bioinformatics. I did so well in the project because I loved it so much and I was like so motivated by it. It all went good. I got a good mark. Then my final year came to an end and I was like, what am I going to do now? I'm very much like you, Yaz. I just wing it. Like, whatever happens, happens. Yeah. I really don't plan for the future because I find it too stressful to think about the future, which, like you said, I know some people think that's a bad thing, but that's just me. I just like to wing it. I don't like to stress. I just see what
happens. I think I stress regardless if I've got a plan or not, but it doesn't help either way.
Literally. So yeah, final year came around and my friend was like, oh, I'm applying for this master's degree to do, to become a physician associate, which is like a position in between a nurse and a doctor, mm-hmm. right? So I applied for this master's. I did all the interviews for it. I was accepted onto the master's. I got all my funding sorted. I was ready to do it. And then in the summer, waiting to start my master's, the professor that I did the project with basically emailed me and was like, hey, I've got this PhD position going in my lab. Like, you should apply. And I said to my mum, like, oh, should I apply? Like, he's Dartmouth. He thinks I can do a PhD because I can't. And my mum was like, no, you absolutely can. Like, just apply and see what happens. Damn. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and apply. I applied. And obviously, because I'm sat here now doing this podcast, I obviously got it. And then I just thought, who the hell is going to pass up an opportunity to do a PhD?
So you don't have a master's?
No.
I went straight from undergraduate
to PhD.
But then I guess that makes sense because I obviously had reset my A-levels and then I took a year out to work because I'm 28 mm-hmm. and you've finished a PhD and you're, I don't know if you want to share your
26
age. Yeah. Okay, so that makes sense. So you didn't do the master's, so it cut out that time.
Yeah, but I think in quite a few countries, you can't do that. So I think the UK is one of the only countries where you can skip.
Yeah, I didn't do a master's.
So you can go straight.
I'm learning so much about you girls today.
Yeah. It's weird because honestly, I was so excited to do this like physician associate job because I always saw myself like working in a hospital or working.
Really?
I wanted to go into medicine, but I didn't get like good enough A-levels and GCSEs. Okay. So that's why I ended up doing biomedical science. And then I was like, okay, next best thing is to go and be a physician associate. And I was so excited to start this master's, but then he just was like, do you want to do this PhD? And I was like, okay, cool. We'll just go for it. See what happens.
And then you got it.
Because I loved bioinformatics. Yeah, and I got it. The interview, I absolutely bombed. I don't know how I got it, but we got it. I honestly think, I was like one of two people who applied. I think that's the reason I got it.
No, it's probably because you did the project on it for your undergrad and it was good that they saw potential and thought, well, like maybe you don't know everything now, but you had a steep learning curve. So again, it's none of this luck thing. I think we need to change that mindset. It's not that, oh, we just got it because no one else applied.
Do you know what it is? I think it's like I said, because I really embraced the fact that I had never done this project and I literally just gave it my all. Like I literally was up to like 2 a.m. every night, like studying programming. Like I was so devoted to like doing so well in it. And I think he says to me all the time, like, I saw that in you and I saw like how determined you were, how motivated you were. And he always says that's why I offered you the PhD, because I knew you'd do really well because I saw like how hard you worked. So yeah, then I obviously ended up starting my PhD. I barely knew programming, like no joke. I literally barely knew anything. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of learned it all in the PhD. And I don't even know how I got through the PhD, but I did. And yeah, now I'm a postdoc working in academia still, and I'm working on epigenetics or something very similar as what I did in my PhD. But yeah, that's kind of an overview of my story. So programming, bioinformatics, all pretty much self-taught and just absolutely winging it. I just wing my life. But Taz, can you give us a little bit of background into you? Because I feel like I've learned stuff about Yaz. Yaz has learned stuff about me. So you've definitely got some secrets that we don't know about.
Yeah, and I didn't know you didn't do a master's either. Like, what's going on?
Okay, yeah. So I have always had an interest in science, literally since GCSE, did triple science, did quite well. I've never, ever, ever been someone who's good at subjects that involve long essay writing. My writing is just awful. Like English, I was not good at. Like, I need a subject where it's a defined answer, not
like you're right or you're wrong.
Yeah, I don't want to interpret something and all the
like the curtains were purple.
Yeah, no,
which
I can't.
Meant like.
I mean, the irony there is that literally is your job now, to interpret things in different ways.
Well, like, yeah, but it's like, it's kind of like, I don't know. Yeah, good
point.
It's
like the data is the data and then you interpret it. So at least you've got
the
like,
irony is that I wrote like an 800 page document for my thesis. So
for someone who hates writing and didn't do English like subjects.
No, literally.
Or like English language subjects.
But I guess that's what's like stemmed my interest. I've always been an outdoorsy child, like very curious. And then, did science at GCSE. And then at A-level, I did maths, chemistry, biology and geography because I really didn't like physics. I spoke about it on another episode. I think the last episode, I didn't have a good physics teacher. And I think that plays such a big role. And I loved chemistry. Like, chemistry was my favorite subject. But this brings me on to like a really important point, right? So I was like, oh, love science. And so the natural route for me, according to my school, according to my parents, was medicine. And like, that's just like a defined job that you're going to have if you like science. But what gets me every time, and it kind of frustrates me a little bit, is that I loved chemistry, but I had no idea like what careers were out there in chemistry, like so what options were available. Chemical engineering, what the hell was that? I literally didn't hear about that until I was at university, until like it was almost a bit too late. Do you know what I mean?
Too late, yeah.
I especially think if you have parents that didn't go to university, then they don't know about these options either. And so I didn't have that. I don't think you guys had that either, did you?
Nah, like my parents didn't go to uni. Did yours live?
Yeah. My parents, no, my parents didn't. And actually, do you know what? In my A-levels, I absolutely adored psychology. Like it was my favorite subject in A-levels. I loved it. I did so well in it because I loved it so much. And I said to my mum, like, oh, I want to do a psychology degree. And she was like, no, you have to do biology. Like, my mum's super supportive, by the way. Like, she said it with good intentions. But she was like, no, I think you should do biology because there's, like, better degrees in biology. But now I know that's not true. But that's, I think,
and it's also, your parents definitely do. Like, I don't think if your parents aren't in the fields, then they don't have an accurate idea of what jobs you can go into. And my parents' opinion was very much like, if it's science oriented, you'll get a good job and you'll earn a lot of money, blah, 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 blah. Like, as cliche as that sounds, but that is genuinely like what my parents pushed me to strive for, which is completely fair enough. Like, that's the kind of background that I and I think you guys are from as well. So obviously I applied for medicine. I didn't get into any of my places. I actually got rejected from all of my medicine university places.
Can you actually elaborate on why you were rejected from them?
Honestly, I think it was just like, I had really good predicted grades, so that wasn't the issue. But I think I had some experience under my belt because I knew that that was required. But I just don't think it was enough. Like, some people volunteered in hospitals for like weeks on end, whereas I did like a couple weeks. So I think that was the main thing. But again, I think that's frustrating, and it comes down to not knowing these things and not having the accessibility to know these things. And also, I didn't really have the luxury of volunteering at hospitals and stuff. I actually tried and always got a door slammed in my face saying that they weren't taking any people, like any volunteers and things. So it was so impossible. Which, but also, like, thinking about it, I don't think I could have had the time to volunteer. I was like,
no.
When I wasn't working, I used to do competitive swimming, so it was competitive swimming, or I was at school, so school, swimming, or working. I couldn't do really anything else. So
yeah, but people that do get the voluntary positions have an in, like they know someone who can be like, oh, my son or daughter, or maybe my child. Yeah, like,
I think there's definitely people who do get it off their own back, but I do agree that I think the majority of people who are fortunate enough to get those positions are so like sought after. The majority of them probably do have an in for sure. But it's also the other luxury is the ability to actually do an unpaid position. Like, for me personally, I did, like, even if I was given that opportunity, like, I probably wouldn't have been able to take it because I had to work because I needed money for certain things, you know? Like, I just didn't have that option to take an unpaid. Like, I needed ways of getting to college. I needed money to get to college. I needed money to get to uni. I just simply couldn't take an unpaid position because my mum wasn't in a position where she could give me the money to get my bus fare to college or get my car to drive to uni. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had to do all that myself, so I needed to work. So an unpaid job was not an option.
Exactly. And I just don't understand how, obviously it's a real privilege that people can do that, but I feel like the systems don't allow for a more diverse like group of people, or they just don't think about people that come from sort of quote unquote like more disadvantaged backgrounds mm-hmm. where they can't access these like unpaid things, because they do put you at a competitive advantage when you try and get jobs mm-hmm. and Taz, you said your predicted grades were good, so it literally is that you just didn't have this like access that other people get, and I just find that
my predicted grades were, I did 4 A levels and I did, my predicted grades were A star AA, and then I'd already got a B in A level maths because I did it a year early. What? So that was
like
a problem.
Smarty pants.
Oh my god.
We're among like wow, Taz, I didn't realize you're like a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a little
nerd.
Hidden. Maybe yeah, nerd, but I was trying to put it nicely.
Oh my god, me and Yaz would have been out together at the weekends doing all the sports.
Honestly, I went out clubbing so much that I don't know.
What, and underage?
I had house parties when I was underage from my 14.
I was going to say, like, sorry, I'm not that I wasn't that lame, babe. I still went to parties and stuff.
Oh, Taz just had it all.
Taz had it all. You're one of them.
Well, anyway, so I received and obviously got rejected from my university places, but I did receive an unconditional offer from Sussex Uni to study biomedical science because I did apply for that as like a backup. And I also got a conditional offer to study chemistry at Imperial, so instead of like medicine but I was still set on medicine, so I decided to study biomedical science at Sussex, and I don't really have any regrets from that. Like, I'm happy with where I am now, so obviously after 3 years I graduated with a first, and decided actually that medicine was no longer for me. So I then went on to explore possibilities of staying at Sussex for my postgraduate degree, because basically I was applying to so many jobs and so many of them were like, oh, PhD or master's is like desired, da 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 da.
Really?
And I was like, I'm not going to get any bloody job if I don't do further education. So then Sussex Life Science Office circulated a funded PhD via email and I found the subject super interesting. So I applied, went to the interview and ended up getting it. Again, I was like, oh, just sheer luck. But like, I probably don't give myself enough credit for that. Then my PhD project was looking at lyssaviruses and rabies and creating a more like a vaccine formulation that's like cross protective against all lyssaviruses. And then I completed my thesis in October 2021, passed my Viva in November 2021. And yeah, maybe we can give some advice to listeners another time on like writing a thesis and like preparing for a Viva and stuff like that. And then whilst I was finishing up my PhD thesis, obviously a common thing is that your funding runs out. So I was like applying for jobs and writing up at the same time, which was stress. And it was during COVID. So I applied for a coronavirus research scientist position and got it. So then I was basically doing two jobs at once. And then once I graduated from my PhD, I continued that like postdoc job for 2 years and then decided enough was enough. I'm going to go travel after like COVID was said and done. So I went traveling for a year and then now I'm in Australia doing a postdoc on the microbiome and respiratory diseases. So yeah.
Wow, that's intense.
That is intense. I'm shocked. Like, I've learned so much that Taz is actually like a brain box.
Yeah.
Obviously we all are, but like Taz has been since day one. You were like birthed and then it was like, yeah, hey, I'm gonna do medicine.
But that's why I think it's so important to talk about people's like different like pathways, because I didn't know like your guys' backgrounds and how you got into a PhD, and like just like we want to make it as accessible as possible to everyone as well.
I do think it's funny how like literally all three of us just fell into it, because I always think that I always thought everyone around me, I almost felt bad because I was like, I think everyone around me is like their lifelong dream was to do a PhD and become a doctor. I was like, damn, I feel a bit bad because I just kind of like fell into it. But it's funny that I think the more people talk to you,
honestly just
the more
went
you realize
with the flow. Yeah.
I think that's the case for most people.
But then also I sometimes do get like major, major imposter syndrome, because even you lot talking about how you got A's or A stars, like I would never. And so for me, sometimes I genuinely think, yeah, I'm not smart enough to do a PhD because I never got them, mm-hmm. like them grades. But then thinking back, like I did work so hard for my undergrad that I keep telling myself that I am here for a reason, and it isn't. I was just lucky. Yeah, so I think I'm trying to like convince myself it's slightly opposite to Taz, to be like, I do deserve to be here. Yeah. Even though I don't have like, the background to prove it.
I'm not going to lie, I've always thought I put so much pressure on myself for A-level. And like now looking back, I really do regret how hard I pushed myself, because I don't know, just like the stress that I put myself under, and like I was just so stressed to try and get really good grades because that is where I saw value, and that's kind of how I'd been brought up. And I kind of look back now and I'm like, I wish I just relaxed a little bit, because I'm not going to lie, looking back, pre-undergrad, you don't need to get A stars to get where you need to be. Like undergrad, final year is where you really, like second and third year, go and try your best. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then if that doesn't work out, get another qualification. Like if you can afford to, get a master's. And then if a PhD is where you want to get up, like you can work towards it in different ways. But I kind of look back and I'm just like, wish I didn't work as hard as I did and put so much pressure on myself.
One thing I was going to say is, because you were just mentioning about like getting a master's and like whether you're able to, but one thing I feel like we haven't said, none of us have said, is that every single one of us had funding and were paid to do our PhD. I think this is another big thing, is that people think that doing a PhD is inaccessible for financial reasons, but I think literally, at least in the UK, 99% of people are actually paid a stipend to do their PhD, which is basically a salary. Yep. And it's basically nothing. Like, you get paid peanuts. But if like the financial side of things is something that's stopping you, just because we were all talking about like having to work and stuff, like most PhDs are, your tuition is paid and you get a stipend.
But can I say something that might be controversial? Mm-hmm. A lot of people do say it's not enough money. And like, if you're living in London, it really isn't. So we get like £18,000 tax-free, but that's more money than I've ever had. And I've had to support myself, like even at undergrad.
18,000?
Like, we get 18,000 a year.
Damn, I didn't get that much.
Yeah, but it's with inflation. So we started on like 15,000,
mine didn't go up.
Like
Mine did not go up from year one to year three, and I was on 13,000.
What? Yeah. We bring home £1,550, which actually, speaking to a lot of my friends that are in jobs on like 30K, after they've paid their council tax, they've paid their student loans back, they literally bring home a couple hundred pounds more than I do. So I feel like winning, and I live in a cheap area in the UK. So for me, bringing home like £1,500 is actually pretty decent. So like, it is livable. And when people,
that's what the point I'm trying to make,
like, saying that it's not
personally. No,
yeah, in London, but I think you get waiting. Like, one of my mates is on like 25k tax free.
I think it depends on the university that you go to. So like how you guys have just mentioned, like your stipend went up with inflation. Mine did not change from year one to year three.
No, mine didn't.
That's
either.
Mad. That's surely illegal. Did it not?
No.
No.
And also, what was also quite hard was that I was affiliated with Sussex University, but I was based at London Government Labs. So I was living, I was having to live at home because I was working basically in London, but I was getting a Sussex non-London stipend. So, yeah, I struggled.
Oh, that's kind of dumb.
And also, can I just say as well, like, yeah, like a stipend is great and you get paid like a lot compared to obviously university and like living off nothing basically. But
yeah, like working
when
part-time.
You are in a PhD for 4 years, you see your friends climbing the career ladder, earning like a lot of money, and you're staying at the same amount for like 4 years. It does get, I got a little bit bitter towards the end, just being like, I'm so poor compared to everybody else.
But then the thing is, you go and do a postdoc in academia and then you're still not even being paid that much.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. I thought you were going to try and end it on a hopeful note, like, yeah, but then you make it. You're like, I mean, making the big bucks.
If you want the big bucks, go to industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think mainly from this conversation, like, we have studied really hard, and whether people think it's luck or not, like, we are where we are now. The money for a PhD, like Tess says, is kind of dead. Like, it's if you're living in London, but it is livable. So don't think that it's inaccessible.
I mean, I think it depends on the person, because,
yeah,
like, some people might have other financial commitments where, like, I know you live on your own, so, like, it's enough for you, but it might not be enough for everyone. So, but it's just, it's good for people to be aware that there is funding there, and that's something that you can factor into your decision of whether or not you should do a PhD.
Yeah.
I think it's just good that people have that knowledge that that funding is available should you need it. Also, you can actually, on top of your stipend, get an extra additional loan from the government. You can get a postdoctoral loan.
Mm-hmm. Can you?
Yeah, I got one during my PhD because for me personally, like, that money was not enough. So I got an extra loan, which obviously now I'm paying back with super high interest rates, but I needed it at the time. So it's what it is. Mm. Okay, well, I feel like, in conclusion, obviously we've all spoke about the specific fields that we're in and the broader fields that we're in. So if anyone has any further questions or feels like we haven't explained something enough, or you just want to talk to us about anything, then obviously please feel free to message us individually. My handle is @agenomicsphd, and I do actually respond to 99% of my messages. The other 1% is only when I'm too busy. So we all respond to all of our messages. Yaz, what's your handle if people want to chat to you?
You can find me on Instagram @marinebiologywithyaz, spelt Y-A-Z.
And Taz?
Yeah, you can find me @taz.phd. And yeah, I'm pretty good at responding to my DMs. But obviously, since it is the last episode of the series, we just want to say thank you so much for listening to our first series of the So Cultured podcast. We put so much work into this podcast, and we really, really, really hope that you enjoyed it. And we will be back for another series very soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have some big plans for season two as well. I think we're just looking to incorporate some feedback from you guys. So if you have a second to drop us a rating on Apple or on Spotify, we would very much appreciate it. Otherwise, as we've said, you can send us a DM with your feedback. And yeah, we look forward to seeing you guys in season two. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. Bye, everyone. Bye.